Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch for each week. Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property finance and money management. Welcome back to the couch, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. You?
Very good, mate. Very good. So this week, we Q&A day, mate.
It's been a while since we've had a little Q&A time.
We love Q&A day.
We do. We do. We've had some great guests on. We've talked about mindset and fair, but now we're moving into the markets.
We are moving into the markets, but I wanted to say a couple of things, Ben. With Q&A day, we love it.
Yes.
And we've got lots and lots of questions from people. So I wanted to sort of give a little bit of guidance to our listeners because we love this segment. But some of the questions that we've got, Ben, are very long and they're very, very specific. So you'll see today that a couple of things. If you want to ask us a question, Ben, go to the website. Go straight to the SpeakPipe little widget on the side because you're going to see from today, Mindset Minute today, and our four questions are all from SpeakPipe. It's like getting the queue jumper pass at the tennis, at the football. You do it on SpeakPipe.
So we give preferential treatment to audio questions.
Because you know why, Ben? Because people come on and their questions are usually 60 seconds or less.
Yeah.
And they're bite-sized questions that we can cover, whereas some people go to it extraordinarily, and we love the fact that they're passionate, they want, but we simply cannot answer a one-page question that someone's written in that has very specifics about their details.
Yeah.
So, but we can, you'll see from the nature of the questions today,
yep,
they're good framework questions.
Love it.
There's an opportunity for us to put lots of meat around it. So, folks, I just wanted to say, if you want to come on to Q&A day, go to SpeakPipe. Now, some people, Ben, they just don't like the sound of their own voice because you'll see today that some people are coming on. If that's you, that's fine. You can go on to SpeakPipe and just say, here's a topic I want you to cover. And we're not going to replay it because we're open for what the people want.
Well, we've had, over 1,000 questions.
We have.
So the reality is that's why we're trying to, you know, there's 1,000 questions there, and we're doing obviously some Facebook Live where we get through a few of them as well. So we want to try and get through all the questions and the themes in the questions because that's what we're about. But, you know, that's the sort of message we've got lots there
absolutely
to get through.
And so I guess, for people, if you've written into us and we haven't answered those questions, some of them, Ben, are a bit old and they're time stamped now.
Yep.
So that they're not relevant or they're just a bit long. So if you can say, for example, hey, look, I'm just looking to buy an investment property and I want to know what an investment grade apartment looks like. It's punchy and it allows us to give some meat around that. Whereas if it's, hey, a bit about my backstory, here's my income, here's what my dog's name is, here's what the property that I've got in this suburb, you know, as good of questions as they have been,
it doesn't work. It's only human nature, isn't it, Bryce? They want an answer to their question.
Yeah.
So that's why they want to give us all the information. But we're never going to give a direct answer to anyone's detailed questions on a podcast because it's advice.
Mm.
So we want to basically make sure that there's a lot of, you know, the advice we give usually comes after about 15 hours of, you know, doing some serious number crunching. So from that point of view, it's important that people understand that, you know, we're not going to do a deep dive and solve their problems just in one pager.
So the question we get when, you know, journalists ring, so how's the market going?
Oh my goodness. there's markets within markets.
So that's something to think about. So if you've got some ideas, let us know. But if you want your question answered, go SpeakPipe Ibis. And keep it sort of frameworks or a topic rather than getting too specific.
But beautiful.
But really excited. Love to hear your questions. So today, Ben, even the mindset... Oh, before we get there, Facebook Live this week with Jeremy.
Yes.
So we went through a lot of really great questions around research. So if you... people in our community, they'll get that on Facebook. They'll get that on our email that we send out. But if you're not, go and check that out. And mate, I just noticed that not only can you get a Big Mac and some fries at McDonald's, they're now into property. They've got a development out of Parramatta. They're
going to propose development. Yes.
Yeah. So their first mixed use development. So that'll be interesting.
A few apartments and a few burgers downstairs.
Would you like
would you like fries with that?
Would you like two bedrooms with that?
I wonder if you get a lifetime supply of Maccas if you buy one of their apartments.
You'd want to have you'd want a VIP card.
You would. Maybe it's free coffee for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Hello, Uber Eats. Yeah. Can you give me some McDonald's? Where would you live? Just upstairs. I just can't be bothered going down the lift. So interesting. But all right, let's kick into Mindset Minute.
Yes.
Today, Ben. This is actually when you listen to Nicole, she's actually reckons it's a cross between.
It's not a Mindset Minute from you. No, well, from the listener.
This is the People's Podcast, mate. Beautiful. We've got to share the love. But Nicole's done a hybrid mindset minute and a life hack. Here we go.
Hi, it's Nicole here from Canberra. I just wanted to let you guys know about a cool thing that my family and I do every night. And I guess it's a life hack, but it's also kind of comes under Mindset Minute. So when we're having dinner every night, we do a few things. So we say one thing we're grateful for, one thing we're looking forward to tomorrow, we were good at today, and one thing we did today that filled someone's bucket, which means making someone happy or doing something nice for someone. And I've got a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we do this every night as a family, and I just think it's a really wonderful thing to share with the Property Couch listeners. All right. Thanks, guys. You're awesome. Bye.
You're laughing. Yeah, I was just laughing because the awesome bit.
Yeah, I think we heard that. Noted. Yeah. Hey, I love that, Ben. I've got a little variation where we get around and we pretend we pull out a card with the boys, and we pull it out and we go, Jack. And then so everyone around the table has to say something they really love about Jack. And it's a really cool way to engage. And then it comes to Mummy, and they get to pick who they hear first. So they get a little bit of a pillow fluffing, but they also, you know, practice, you know, finding the good things in people. So I think that's terrific, and that's why it resonated with me.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
So fantastic. Thank you to Nicole. What a wonderful mindset minute that is. But, mate, today, that's just the entree to what it looks like, because our entire episode is from the people. So we've got the first question. This one's from Matthew around investment assumptions.
Hi, Ben and Bryce. This is Matt from the Gold Coast. Just wanting to ask you guys to take a little bit of time to examine some of the very general and commonly held assumptions that go around in property, particularly stuff like, hey, you should always buy, you know, in this order for capital gains, you should buy a freestanding house and a duplex and a townhouse and an apartment. All these kind of assumption-based approaches, which are general rules, be good to sort of examine when they're true and when they're not true, different cases. Look forward to your answer. Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Matthew. Mate, investment assumptions.
Yeah.
We'll test the practicality test.
Because it is an interesting one. And what's challenging about this? I mean, see, median house price is a blunt instrument, right? It's a blunt measure of the change in value in a particular suburb, right? Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it can be influenced by a new lot of stock coming on the market that might be a premium grade and sold for a higher point, and everyone thinks that the suburb's done really, really well. So it's a very difficult instrument to be able to do that. Now, the hedonic index is the best way to measure, because it's sort of taking into consideration things like condition, age, and all those other things. Very, very complex algorithm, very, very difficult to do, and requires an enormous amount of data. And an absolutely enormous amount of data to get some reliable accuracy. So what Matt's talking about here is this challenge that these general comments that we make. You know, 16,000 suburbs across the country, there is always exceptions to the rule, but in the sound bites that we give and we hear in the media, we're always, you know, like what you said before, how's the state of the market? Mm. You know, it's like, well, how long have we got? Mm. Okay, so what Matt is really asking us here, and what we're, you know, what we want to share with the listeners is this, is what the data shows us. Now, to get this data as accurate as possible, it does also tell us that in different areas of cities and in different cities in general, it reacts in different ways. So when we talk about practicality tests and all those type of things, we're still being generalist, but we're taking a little bit more of a layer down below. And so Matt might be saying, well, on the Gold Coast, it's different. Or, you know, in the marketplaces that I'm looking at, they've had some really terrific growth over the last 3 years. And we absolutely know in the last 2 years that the low interest rates have pushed property prices up in the outer suburbs and the middle ring. In fact, the best performing areas have been the middle ring areas between sort of 15 and say 25 kilometres from the big cities. And that's got to do with the affordability. So it all keeps coming back to demand and supply around what that looks like. So where it's more affordable and everyone's got the money, when there's FOMO happening, we get these marketplaces to move. Now, the real challenge with these particular marketplaces, including the marketplaces in the outer suburbs, is when interest rates do eventually go up. okay, what is happening to those particular markets? Will they be stagnant for longer because there's no additional demand or drive to get into those markets? Will they correct? Will they be the markets that struggle because if you've got the higher income, do you move closer in? So Matt, how we analyze this is it's very much in terms of looking at the analytics of the situation, but also what we've always tagged as human interest and human behavior. And that is that if you had a choice, where would you want to live? And usually people who have a choice would want to live closer in with a nice big home, with a nice big piece of land, with all the amenity and the spoils and the less traffic and all of those types of things around that. They're usually time poor, busy professionals who generate this level of income and they want to live closer to the action. So with that principle as being the bedrock of looking at valuations in different locations around Australia and the world for that matter, in studying that human interest and human behaviour, the practicality test is around, and also, you know, in terms of how we do the buyer's decision quadrant, is always around looking at what will meet my needs. So I've got essential needs, which is I need shelter, tick. But then it's about, well, I need shelter for four people. Well, a one bedroom or a studio apartment can't do that for me. So where's that price point? So it's where price point meets acceptable needs for the individual. Because at the end of the day, the property market's controlled by owner occupiers with their long-term hold and their long-term emotion. We get on the coattails of that. So, you know, if you're coming back to it, we talk about land to asset ratio. So where the land component, the land value always underpins the ultimate value of the property. So if I can get the best bit of land as close to the city as possible, then that land is going to serve me well as an investor because I can either, you know, keep the existing property on it or I can transform that property and basically equity harvest, solve a bigger problem and potentially make money out of the reuse of that land. But when we are talking about where demand ultimately lives, if you gave everyone a choice, everyone would want a backyard, everyone would want a front yard, everyone would want an entertainment zone, everyone would want things that make living an enjoyable life, that type of aspect. So when we go into these different markets in different cycles, you can sit back and say, well, in the last 4 years, guess what? It has been townhouses in this area that have done better than houses. Because there is a ceiling, you know, we can't buy $5 million, scarce mansions and expect to get a really great overall return because the cash isn't there to support the investment, yet the capital growth on that particular asset still might be terrific. It might move from $5 million to $10 million over the next 20 years. I'd still like to have that extra $5 million in my back pocket. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because the... When you said everyone wants a backyard, we should clarify, everyone in Australia, because that's what their normal is. If you go to some of the Asian countries where they're used to density, they come over here, they gravitate back to their normal. I always think, you know, when you've got a long weekend, Ben, what's the natural instinct for someone like us born in the 70s in Australia with a, you know, a detached house with a Hills Hoist and a barbecue surrounded by a garden? We want to get in our car and we want to bust out and we want to drive to space, whether that's down to the ocean, down to the bush, and that's something that's intrinsically in us. Mm. And so when we have our living arrangement, that's what we want. I mean, so, but depending on affordability, but yes. that's ultimately what we want. So in terms of those investment assumptions that Matt's talking about, you know, they're reasonable assumptions without taking into account specifics of which city, that people want as much land as they can and then they move towards less and less land. But it ultimately comes down to the three basic filters through which you look at a property is, does it have owner-occupier appeal? Is it investment grade? Meaning, is it in the... Because a $5 million house, Ben, might be growing its, you know, 8% proverbials off.
Yep.
But if you can't afford it, it's not investment grade. So it has to be an investment grade price point, and it also has to be investment grade in terms of the history of its performance, showing that it's investment grade. But the third one is scarcity. And so land, as much land as you can get, is scarce. I've never really seen at auctions, Ben, where someone has just slogged it out, absolutely slogged it out and got emotional over a two-bedroom apartment. I haven't. But I've seen it on a four-bedroom house on 600 square metres of land with six, seven people just... you know, drawing swords and, you know, slaying six of them and one person standing with blood sort of coming off because they've paid more than they had. It was an emotional decision that they made to buy that because it's scarce and they want it and it's something that's valuable. So in terms of In terms of investment assumptions, yes, as a general broad assumption, as much land as you can get, and then as the sort of land percentage starts to diminish, so too does the demand in general.
Correct.
Specifically, we'll get anomalies.
Correct. And so to do this true analysis of what Matt's asking for is you need to measure every sale in the history of every property in Australia. You need to extract any renovations that have happened on those properties, because we do see that even in the better areas that there's definitely uplift in terms of people, house proud people who reinvest in new kitchens, bathrooms and so forth. So we do know that medium is a blunt measure, but we have no other at the moment, you know. So with machine learning and AI and potentially big lots of data, and we're talking about maybe 20 to 40 million sales transactions, maybe we can get a little bit better. But again, what you do for that machine to do a better job than what the human can do is it's got to have images of every room, and it's got to determine the quality of those images, and it's got to overlay that with a performance. So it's got to basically say, so, you know, this is the nirvana of setting up a machine learning tool that was going to predict property prices down to the actual property itself. Very difficult to do, because each property price is also underpinned by the street prices, and then the suburb price, and then the local government area price, and then the city price. Those types of things are really important. And come back to your point before about emotional buyer. The only exception I've ever seen on a unit where that's happened is uninterrupted courtyard. City views.
Yeah, or a courtyard.
I've seen, or a courtyard. Hmm. So who wants both of those?
Mm.
Well, is that status?
Mm.
Is the fact that I can walk out and have a look over Bondi Beach or something like that, where that, you know, people will pay a premium for? You bet.
Mm.
If it's overlooking a natural wonder, you bet. You know, those types of things are the exceptions to the rule again.
But they're creating the sense of space. The courtyard is space, and
correct.
The view of Bondi Beach is the illusion of space.
Yeah,
it's you know, there's your swimming pool that you just go down to with 20 lifeguards.
And there's scarcity,
you.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, Bondi, an example, there might still be 4,000 apartments that have water views, but the reality is some of them have absolute water views. Some of them have, you know, almost 180-degree water views versus some have water glimpses. Well, we all take that into consideration, and that's what we understand around owner-occupier appeal.
And it's a perfect example, because you know how Bondi Beach on a big summer's day, they can have 30,000 people on that beach.
Yes.
And yet there's only a small amount of property around that has that view. So again, it just highlights that scarcity. So Matthew, really good question around investment assumptions. Let us know if that's a help. But there is definitely some science behind property being. I, just quickly, when you first get into this game, you read a textbook and you think it goes up in value every 10 years. So you think all you got to do is put your name on a title. But as you've spent 20 years unpacking this, it's like absolutely not. There's a science behind it, and there is a reason why some of these things with higher land, the nirvana is high land content in high land value areas.
Correct.
Because land content on its own in low land value areas is
brilliant.
Is not going
to well work. Put, mate. So, listen to that again, everyone. That's exactly how you summarise it.
Now, all right, mate. So let's. I've got another one here from Pia. It's a good question about, it's a bit of a segue. Apartments in Brizzy.
Hi, Ben and Bryce. First of all, thank you for all the great advice. I've been slowly learning about investment for about 2 years now before I buy my first property, and I don't have a lot of access to people in the know, so finding your podcast has been a little golden nugget for me. I'm a 31-year-old single woman from Brisbane with a budget of $360,000. And my question is about the Brisbane unit market. My priority is investment, and I'm open when it comes to the location or type of property I purchase. But ideally, I'd like to buy a place that I can live in the short to medium term, and a Brisbane unit is the best fit in that regard. I've been looking mostly at 2-bedroom, 1 to 2 bathroom units in a 3 to 10K radius of the city in smaller, older boutique blocks. I've heard all the warnings about the oversupply in the Brisbane unit market at the moment, but I'm wondering, is this that time when others are fearful and I should be greedy? Where do you think we are in the market cycle? Are Brisbane units about to go up in value, or are we still looking at another couple of years of downward or flat growth? Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Pia.
So Pia, your focus is not so much on investment. It's actually on capital growth. Because the moment you said that the priority is for investment, but you want to live in it, you're actually, it's got to serve two masters. So what we're looking for here is a property that you could buy that you're going to live in as an owner-occupier for a few years with growth potential. That's what we're talking about here. And certainly, you know, being fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful, there is a marketplace here. Now, the challenge with that is that it could be a couple of years that you're sitting on that. But if you've got a long-term play, terrific. But if you're looking for growth in the next 3 to 5 years, you've got to be very selective of where you're buying. And so the fact that you're looking at those pockets within 3 to 5 kilometres is a huge tick, all right? And the fact that you're, so that the things you want to be looking for is within walking distance of your high streets. Absolutely critical. And your high streets have got to have a good selection of lifestyle elements associated with that, coupled with good access to central business district for work opportunities. They are the critical things that you need to look for when it comes to that. My other little tip before I pass over to Bryce is to buy a tired unit. One way in which we could add value for you is by living in it, you can then basically, you know, undertake, you know, DIY renovations and tidy that unit up. Maybe some non-structural opening of maybe kitchen to a dining area. So, you know, I'd be focused on more of a 70s tired block that you could add value to and present that in a good light in a few years' time when you need to get it revalued and release equity.
Well, unsurprisingly, Ben, I agree with you because we are on the same page with this. I wrote an article, well, no, I didn't write an article. I was interviewed for an article that appeared in Domain about this very topic because we've helped some clients buy in these the river suburbs, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Brisbane has got an oversupply. Here's what we've learnt from purchasing in Brisbane, Ben, that you've got to stay in those prestigious suburbs that people aspire through the status test, Ben. So they want to live in Hawthorn and Bulimba and East Brisbane and Norman Park and New Farm, just to name a few, because as you said, they've got all the villages, but you can jump on the Cat to get into work, yep. You can get on the motorways down to the Gold Coast if you're on the north, even sort of at, you've got the major employment centres of the airport and the city. So there's lots of reasons to consider buying some of this stuff that can't, it's really at rock bottom prices.
Well, people are going to go in 10 years' time.
Oh, wow, how did you get in cheap there? Those apartments. What I love about the 70s apartments, Ben, is back in the day when they were bought, they were high density. And they were, like, people were buying houses and they were considered high density. Now they're considered on the very low end of medium density because they, and the beautiful thing about them is they were in really great streets. And they were, if you're in Brisbane, you've got a Queenslander next door, and on the other side, you've got a beautiful home next to it. Might be a Queenslander, just might be a post-war home. But ultimately, they're in good streets, in close proximity to those villages, in close proximity to the Cat. Whereas now the developers, if they want to go and build something, they have to go into a high-rise in the CBD, or they have to get a corner block that used to be a petrol station, which has now got retail on the bottom and, you know, 50 floors above. They've just got so much scarcity about them. They're very difficult for developers.
With one car park and two people who want to live there
and
with
their
two
floor
cars.
Plan was bigger. They haven't got an architect at 2 a.m. in the morning going, well, we just can't get it to work, and they push a button and it shrinks everything by 15%. It's and that absolutely happened. So you've got the scenario where they exist, they've got history, they've usually got low body corporates, there's no pool, there's no caretaker, there's no lift, they're in the best streets, they're in the best suburbs. And going forward, yes, if you wanted to put it up for rent, what we're saying to our clients is you have to be aware that there is a bit of an oversupply of product that doesn't really compete with what you bought, but ultimately it's just created supply and therefore the tenants have a little bit of the power. But going forward, you've still bought in the premier locations and you've got the best properties. You said tired units. Here's something else that we've learned, Ben. If you're going to buy a tired unit for Pia, she, obviously she's going to live in it. If you're going to buy a tired unit as investment, that's bad news if you're not going to renovate it straight away. Because what we've learned is that the rental market is very unforgiving in the Brisbane marketplace. If you've got a tired 70s kitchen, 70s bathroom, because you are competing with the oversupplied units that are in South Bank and in the CBD. So if you don't have it in your budget to renovate straight away, Ben, you're going to have to know that that's going to take a while to rent.
Yep.
But the long-term game is going to be fine because you're in the best spots. But so I would say, and you know, and some of the data that's available now for Brisbane oversupply, we'd love to rewind and actually have that data 3 years ago because that would have been really helpful for that oversupply story.
Yep.
But we live and learn on some of that, and we've got better at those metrics.
Yes.
But ultimately, these people, our clients, have bought river suburbs, Ben, north and south, and so there's no big. Like, for example, we put some clients into Morningside or in Hawthorn. There's no massive
developments in Bulimba and Hawthorne and Norman Park and East Brisbane. There's a few, but there's not like you're seeing in Newstead and Fortitude Valley and you're seeing in the CBD. So, but the point is they are affecting the rental market. So, but I'm still very, very bullish on this style of property in Brisbane. If you think I'm from Perth, we're sister suburb to Brisbane, where everyone typically lives in a house, and you've got Melbourne and Sydney where investment or living in an apartment is considered normal. But just have a look at the number of people that are going to move to Brisbane in the next 10 and 20 years, Ben. The psyche of that city is going to have to change.
Yeah, it's going to get more cosmopolitan.
It's going to get more dense.
Yep.
And the people who are buying in at, you know, she's talked about a budget of 350, 360.
Yeah, 360, yep.
We were buying it where we're getting 5% yields, Ben. Some cases 5.5%. Now, they have come off, no doubt about it, but they're still getting 4.5%. Which is, show me 4.5% around the country. So I would say that this option, but I think Ben hit the nail on the head beautifully. You've got to be really specific, Ben. You've got to make sure that it's, you know, have a think about someone who's in an apartment. They've got to walk typically to public transport. They want to walk to lifestyle amenities on the weekend.
And the negotiating power is with you. You know, in an oversupplied market and a soft market like it is, you can negotiate harder.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid. It's absolutely a buyer's market up there. So don't be afraid to, you know, find two or three properties and do your best bidding on those properties to get the best result, because you just never know.
Absolutely, Ben. You've got to take advantage of your negotiating power. Pia said she wanted it for living in. Australians love space. They love privacy. They love seclusion. So if you're buying in, you know, in Brisbane, you can get 1-4s, 6-packs, 12-packs. You know, in Melbourne, Sydney, they're 21s and 30s, and even they are still investment grade. But in Brisbane, you don't really want to go over 12s.
No, 12's a cap. Tops. Yeah, 15 for a special extra large style unit.
Yeah.
But 12 packs max.
So you get something special, you get some privacy, you get low body corporates of $1,500 and below. Yeah. You can, as you said, you can make it, you put your own stamp on it. She's 31, she might be hitting peak power within her income.
Check your flood zones if you're going for a ground floor.
That's actually another very good point, Ben. Because some of those river suburbs are affected by floods. But Brisbane's easy to do the search, Ben. You go on to the council, they've got a flood zone. It can tell you if it was in the 2011 flood, can tell you if it was in the 1974 flood. In fact, the 2011 flood was lower than the 74, but it affected more people in 2011 because of density.
Yes.
So you can check all of that stuff really, really easily. But we've got a differentiation between apartments and flats.
Mm.
Chase the flats.
Yep, chase the flats. There it is. So, good one. Thanks, Pia.
All right. As I queue up the next one, Ibis.
Hey, guys. James here. Hey, really big fan of your podcast and your business, Empower Wealth. My question for the podcast is, there have been a lot of media articles and social media posts around lenders outside of the big four banks or second tier lenders. I'm really keen to get your views on the pros and cons of using these lenders. Cheers, guys.
Hey, Ben, can I just say a good question from James. The discussion, we're going to dive a bit deep on second tier lenders, but it brings up a really good point around why you'd want to use an investment savvy mortgage broker. Because when the APRA first made the changes, it wasn't about what your borrowing capacity, it's what your borrowing strategy. And part of that was sometimes using these second tier lenders to help you be able to access more money. It was this pivot, this game of strategy to try and get access to funds, which if you went to a bank or you shopped online at an online rate, quite often you don't get that sort of advice. But so second tier lenders have made it a little bit more navigatable through some of the changes that APRA's had.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've been broking for many years now. So I've been through the GFC, and one of the observations we had there for the likes of the second tier lenders and you know, the likes of Wizard and a few others, Rams and so forth, at that time they were getting their funding offshore. Life was pretty good. Money was abundant. The cost of that money was really, really cheap. And so they could make a difference, and they were giving cheaper interest rates and alike. GFC hits. All of these funding arrangements dry up. Refinancing fixed to variable all became very messy. Businesses went out. You know, we no longer have a Wizard. Rams was sold or bought by Westpac as pretty much a distribution channel. So a lot changed in that time, and we saw people get caught out. Okay, so there's always that risk of potentially getting caught out. Now, the market's matured. We've got RMBs that we raise money for and a few other things that now allow a bit more security in that particular space. But it's interesting that we've also had to pivot. So in our business, as an example, if we're doing sort of 30 million, 35 million a month in submissions, we have pivoted, you know, so we did like the idea of putting two or three properties with one lender and then pivoting to the next lender and getting the best pricing discount you could. Nowadays, it is all around for some of our more sophisticated, higher risk clients. They want to get into more properties. And so with that, we've obviously had to pivot, and we definitely are looking at lenders that fall outside of APRA's regulations around ADI. So basically authorised deposit taking institutions. So they're not regulated under the banking regulation. So we have been looking at that. Now, that's not for everyone. It's been a small difference. Still, the vast majority of the people we are still putting into the more convenient, still well-priced, more flexible. We've got to have the critical, you know, multiple offsets if we can get them. And we'll talk more about that in the future in terms of what we do with Money Smarts. So all of those types of things are really important. But let's go through some of the pros and cons, Bryce.
Yeah, we do that, Ben. I think it's a good idea. But what's interesting too is if you've got a borrowing capacity, Ben, you can have four different lenders, A, B, C, and D, and have a totally different borrowing capacity with all four of them with the same data. Yeah. So it's important that you open your mind to some of these second-tier lenders. Pros for second-tier lenders, flexibility with types of income verification. So you can still get a low doc. Or even a no-doc loan with some of these second-tier lenders. Not that we do them internally.
You're going to be paying for it. Yep. Don't be thinking you're going to get a sharp pencil on, you know, sharp interest rate on that. It's definitely going to be a cost. But for some people, again, if they can make money out of that, they're willing to take on that higher risk, but be careful.
Exactly.
Flexibility in terms of types of employment's another one. So, you know, in terms of if you're self-employed, you've got short-term employment, you're on casual contracts or whatever, those are certainly some exceptions. So that's niches that these guys play in terms of some of the second tier lenders. So if you've been self-employed for a short period of time, not the regular 2 years, those types of things is where they find their niche and they go after it.
You mentioned it before about deposit taking institutions, and that's who APRA regulates. Quite often they're not covered by the APRA regulations because they're not taking those deposits. So it's private money. So that's where they get that little bit of extra flexibility with their lending options.
Yeah, so we want to make sure that they're also got their offsets. So I you know, if you're going to go to these types of lenders, you might have a mainstream lender that does all that features and functionality that you need to automate your Money Smart setup, and then you might use this lender for an investment property one to it, because all it needs to do is just look after that bit of debt, that's all. But if you're going to try and bring all of it across to maximize your borrowing power, then make sure it's also got some of that features around being able to do the banking that you need to do to effectively pay down debt when the time comes to pay it down.
We haven't said it for a while, Ben, but there's a 15-second rewind on that, because I think you said it, you know, you do it all day, every day with what we're doing in the team here, but for people to realise that there's a primary bank and then you're just maybe using this just for the 80%, for example.
Yeah.
And then you can still have all the features and functions of the four pillars. So very, very key point that you mentioned. Interest rates can be lower, because their cost of funds is often a bit cheaper, and they've got more of an appetite for the small time, maybe mum and dad developers as well.
Yeah, so I mean, they'll take on a little bit more of that niche product, and that's important. At the moment, that we are definitely seeing, you know, all of the larger mortgage broking firms who specialise in the property investment space have been using more lenders than they have in the past. So they might have used, say, a staple of four or five. They're now probably using a staple of 12.
Mm.
And that's because of the regulatory changes. Mm. And ultimately, our job is to find a solution, appropriate solution, that the borrower can safely repay. But we're obviously opening our eyes. We're lifting our eyes a little bit on that. In terms of the cons, some of the big ones, they are risk adverse in terms of where that security is. So, you know, mining towns and so forth, or high density areas like postcodes, you're going to see some restrictions on that. So you can get really excited that their policy is really good, their credit policy is great, and you think this is great, and then you go and check their postcode restrictions and it's like, boom, boom.
Well, I mean, we ran into that issue ourselves, Ben, because we're chasing some balanced assets and we're looking on, there's a couple of spots we'd identified on the Sunshine Coast, and the bank said that's a postcode restriction there. So effectively, they're paying policy with property as well. So, but that meant that the client was checkmated in a way, because the type of property that they needed to get the funding wasn't allowed. So definitely postcode restrictions can be limiting.
And one of the big questions that come up, Bryce, is around, is my money safe?
Mm.
Now, I've had this question probably the most of all people who are nervous investors or nervous borrowers when they don't know the brand name of the second tier lender. Is my money safe? Now, if you've just taken out debt with them,
doesn't matter.
You're an asset to them, right? So that's, you know, your property is still owned by you. So ultimately, you know, there is still some minor risk around, you know, what sort of happens if the whole banking system collapses. But the reality is, and this is what I explain to people, the loan book for that particular lender is their asset. So ultimately, that's a saleable item in the event that they have some hardship. So you would normally then move across to a new funder, but that's borrow money. Your risk sort of lives in having offset money or savings attached to that, in the sense that is that at risk? Because if they're not a licensed bank, then the reality is their money may not be guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what you've got to understand, and understand that risk and execute accordingly.
Well, on that as a segue, they do have limited or no offset facilities.
Yeah.
So if it's your primary, if the second tier lender is your primary lender, they can really undo
the
money smarts that we're after, because we really want to take advantage of that offset account. So they if they have limited or no offsets, that's not going to work if it's primary.
Yeah, so usually they have fewer products. And the reality is, you know, if there are economic hardship times like GFCs, they become expensive because their funding is usually provided offshore, as opposed to most of the major banks generate the vast majority of their lending through their savings and term deposits that they offer those people who are putting money in the bank. So there's a couple of interesting ones there. If I was to summarise them from a big picture point of view, you're usually shopping there because you've got a better servicing opportunity, which means more borrowing power, which means securing potentially a better asset. As long as you understand that their flexibility and how you bank with them is a little bit more restrictive, but in some cases, their customer service can be pretty good.
Mm. So, all right, great summary, like that. So hopefully that helped you, James. Really great question. Hopefully the listeners got the benefit from that. So great question from Matthew around investment assumptions, Ben. Great question from Pia around two-bedroom apartments, or two-bedroom flats, as we like to say in Brizzy. And a really great question there from James regarding second tier lenders. So Ben, Q&A day, we want to encourage more people to get involved, like Matt, Pia and James. But mate, we've also got another special...
we're going to have to leave it there, aren't we? Because we're going into a new segment.
We are, mate. I'm not going to steal your thunder, mate.
Well, here's your runway. That's all right. Well, we're just calling it Data Dive.
Data Dive.
Okay, DD. So...
got to do your DD.
We've got to do DD. So obviously we're going to invite Jeremy to come on now and have a chat with us around what sort of insights he's seeing in the data at the moment. So this will be a new segment, not every week, but we're basically, when we feel that there's some insights that we want to share, we're going to start to look at that data a little bit more. So we've done some great mindset stuff in the early part of the year. Now that the market's live and moving and we can get some of those insights to share, we're going to share them with you all.
G'day, Jeremy. How are you going?
Pretty good.
Except for that little croaky throat.
It's
not even winter yet, eh? Save that for the change of season. Well, actually, it is a change of season. It's just summer to autumn. Can you believe it's autumn already?
I know. Well, not with the weather we're having down here in Melbourne. It's amazing.
Yeah, but the tail end of summer was rubbish. So.
Indian summer. Exactly. Indian summer, I call it.
Hey, new segment. We're pretty excited about this. We're going to get you on regularly to the data dive, Jeremy. This is like the AFL grand final for you, isn't it? So we can just jump into the data.
AF what?
New South Wales boy, right? NRL listeners will be pretty happy with that.
Yeah. So, mate, we there's not much data to analyse in January, so...
Yeah, it gets a little bit quiet. Mm. Obviously, everyone focusing on holidays. Some of the stats can get really quiet, like you don't have an auction on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So that's usually, quiet weekend. It can influence some of the other stats too, like one that I want to talk about. I know. Are we ready to go into this?
Mate,
This is
your segment, mate. Online search interest.
Yeah.
I'll just remind listeners to what that is. So it's the number of people that are searching for property versus the number of properties for sale. And we call that online search interest because it's conducted online.
Mm. Yeah, we did a little Facebook Live earlier this week. And you know, we were saying how much of does that make up the secret sauce, and and it's an important indicator.
It is, yeah. But the thing is, it can get a little bit funny over the Christmas New Year's period, because obviously there's two variables. It's the number of people looking. So if everyone's gone on vacation,
As I said on the Facebook, there's a spike in Bondi, there's a spike on the Gold Coast.
Well, definitely spikes in regional areas.
Holiday locations.
Maybe I can buy here. What's for sale around here?
Yeah. And of course, you can also get a limited number of listings and it skews the other way. So it's nothing you should place too much importance on for the seasonal change. There could be a spike, there could be a dip, but yeah, we'll go through some of the figures, yeah? You want me to?
Yeah, let's go. So, online search interest, where have we seen? So what we normally do, guys, is we look at the significant urban areas. So we're monitoring the biggest population centres across Australia. Usually, you know, we can talk about the top 50, but we're diving in on really the top 20 at the moment. And so this is where we've seen some shift from where we saw at the end of last year. And in some cases, we're going to also talk about what they look like a year earlier in some cases. So, yeah, let's have a look.
Okay, so there's possibly, arguably, an increase in Perth.
We could be turning. I could have found the bottom.
Off a low base. And Adelaide, Gold Coast, Newcastle, Maitland, Central Coast, definitely Geelong, Sunshine Coast, and Hobart's still high. And interestingly, Bendigo looks like it's trending upwards in terms of online search interest. Yeah.
Now, that doesn't automatically send everyone to those locations, because you've got to look at all the variables.
One indicator.
Is there some seasonality in that, Jeremy? Have you seen that before? Because with the exception of Perth and Adelaide, you've got Gold Coast, Newcastle, Central Coast, Geelong, all seaside, aspirational lifestyle locations.
Well, yeah,
Hobart to a certain extent.
Sure, yeah, I get your point. But these are markets that we have noticed being quite hot recently as well for other metrics.
Okay. Yeah. So there you've heard some good data diving there. The other one we wanted to sort of spend a bit of time talking about, which for us, you know, prior to having the ability to look at all the markets in real time, was we've always believed that auction clearance rates are your immediate indicator when you're in the field, aren't you, Bryce? I mean, when you're in the field, you're seeing auction clearance, you're seeing the number of people turning up when you've got, you know, six buyers agents full-time out there checking out the markets all the time. We know what that looks like. So, you know, in talking about Sydney and Melbourne, we'll get them out of the way first. They're not in Jeremy's data in terms of material change, but we saw, I was having a look at the location score data, and back in February of 2017, the clearance rate for the month was averaging around 76%. So, and then for Melbourne, it was also averaging around 76%. Now, fast forward, and it's just 1 month, so it's comparing 1 month to month. So we don't want to just say this is a definitive trend, but we've definitely seen 76 down to 69 for this latest month in 2018 for Sydney. And Melbourne's still holding okay at 73. And we were talking before we went on air around, you know, what we saw on the weekend. Talk a little bit more about what happened in Melbourne.
Yeah, well, this weekend we had, you know, they declared under 70% for the first time that I can remember for a long time.
Yeah.
But it was on 1,568 properties, Ben. So it's still
pretty sad. Because when we talk about a balanced market, a balanced market we think is around that sort of 60 to 65% clearance rate. Anything below that we feel is a buyer's market. Anything above that, potentially as you move into the 70s, still becomes the power is still potentially with the seller as opposed to the buyer. And when you're getting in 76s and 80s and 90s, the data is pretty strong to suggest that there is an absolute strong demand in the marketplace, and that's where really strong capital growth can occur.
I would say for us with the auction clearance rate, because we are typically, by the nature of what we do, always going to be buying properties that are typically got clearance rates of 90, 95%, even though the market's suggesting that, because it's not our model to go and chase properties that have got no steam in them at all. we use Jeremy's research to give us the leading indicator on where we need to be, and then we go and match that with the fundamental on the ground. So we just, for example, we probably missed
30% of the properties that we bought last month. So we're still missing a few. So the markets
that, you went after. Yeah.
So the markets that we're after have still got strong demand. And that's interesting for me, and I'll be interesting to see what, you know, Jeremy says database. But I'm talking to guys in Sydney and they're saying, well, as a market, Sydney has come off and there's the exclamation marks. Yep. But where they're buying, again, it's
some markets are still high 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And also you've got to remember that for one weekend, you might have 20 absolutely beautiful properties which have high owner occupier appeal, and you can have a 95% clearance rate on those. And then you can have one weekend where there's five dog boxes because it's a long weekend and you only sell the rubbish usually on those weekends. So it does move from time to time. So like with any data, it's never definitive. We're using a blunt instrument to measure it, which is median house prices. So they're all important ones. And then, you know, when we go about Brisbane, it's gone from 52 down to 49. Not a material change, not enough to call it. And
well, the option market in Brisbane
so
isn't
small.
It's not that material for us. Correct. So we're buying a fair bit of stuff in southeast Queensland, Ben, and rarely do we have to enter the fray on blue chip good properties under an auction environment.
Yep.
So it's normally Melbourne and Sydney that the metric really impacts on us.
Adelaide's holding back on the Perth story off a very, very low base. Just to give you an idea, Perth 29 in February 2017, now up to 33. So not a material enough change to sit 10%, back and go.
That's 10% growth.
So not really. Got ACT 72 to 69, so probably you call that flat. You wouldn't judge that on one comparison. And Gold Coast also sitting flat, but again, low base. We don't necessarily say it comes off that. So auction clearance rates in terms of what you did see, Jeremy, let's talk to that.
Most of these significant urban areas, Sydney, Melbourne, like you've just gone through. By the way, the data that we collect for auction clearance rates is monthly, so it's not a week to week. So you're not seeing a lot of that sort of volatility.
Yep.
But it was really Perth, probably a slight pickup. And Adelaide, those were the standouts. Everything else just looked like business as usual.
And can I just say on Adelaide, that's a good lesson for a lot of people who are listening, Ben, because we've been helping clients buy there for a couple of years now, and a lot of people would turn their nose up at Adelaide, but some of the best returns over the last 18 months have come from that particular market. So I'm not surprised to see the spike in clearance rates there, because I did notice that stuff that we were buying under private treaty was then moving to auction because they were seeing the demand.
Right.
So that was actually, and so to see the numbers building is not a surprise.
So I mean, all in all, any other comments on that before we move to one
just
more?
Just that there was a drop in Central Coast for auction clearance rates, which understandable. I mean, gee, it's had some fantastic growth over the last 5 years. So yeah, a cooling of the market.
And you could also, I mean, a lot of auctions can happen in the summertime in that market too. I reckon there's a seasonal element to that, because if I'm on the Central Coast and there's a big swell of population that heads to the beaches for Christmas, we definitely know. I mean, you know, Great Ocean Road is a perfect example. And also down the Mornington Peninsula, you auction great properties in the summer months because that's when everyone's there. And they've got the time to sort of think about their, you know, holiday homes and so forth. But we do know that obviously Central Coast has a lot of permanent residents. That whole Hunter, that whole region everywhere around there is obviously difficult. As we've got a little bit of maintenance on the building, so sorry about that, but we'll keep moving. So it is interesting, but they're obviously good observations. I thought we'll round out this data dive in terms of days on market. I think it's important that we do that. And we want to do this on a regular basis. So we'll keep revisiting these variables, and all of the people who use locationscore.com.au get to see this. But obviously for our listeners, we want to share that as well.
All right. So days on market, there were marginal increases in Central Coast and Wollongong, nothing alarming. Obviously with days on market, you want this to be as low as possible.
So they're drifting a little bit.
Yeah, they're drifting, which is understandable after so much heat.
But just for clarity, this is for February, right?
Yes. Month ending February. Yeah. Yep. And but the good news is there were decreases in Geelong, Sunshine Coast, Hobart. Well, Hobart's fairly consistent, but it's had a very strong trend downwards in days on market over the last year. Newcastle, Maitland was good. Gold Coast, Tweed Heads, and Darwin, can you believe it?
Darwin.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's
a I'd like to see another couple of months.
200 days to 180.
Isn't it? Well, same thing for like Hobart. Obviously, if you look at the CoreLogic numbers, it's the number one capital growth city around Australia. And we've just been through an election down there that obviously the Liberal Party has retained power in that particular. So not if you talk about Stockholm market down there, you have a look at the Stockholm market and it's fallen. It's gone down really, really low. Or well, who sells through through a political period? You normally don't see. So I'm wondering whether now that everyone knows, okay, we've now got it's a majority rule, so it's not a hung parliament. It's not a difficult. People are like hopefully just getting on with it, and we'll probably see some more property come onto the market. But it is so tight there that's why we're seeing that growth story.
Stockholm market's an issue in a lot of the major centres, to be honest. So but yeah, good point.
So thanks for coming in, mate. We really appreciate you doing that.
Thanks for having me here.
We really want to sort of build out this segment over the course of this year and sort of give the listeners a little bit more context around some of those particular marketplaces and some of the, this is one of the new things that we're looking to do, as well as some news topics. So we know that there's been a bit of news around infrastructure and a few other things. So we're working on potentially bringing in some great...
We're making some phone calls
to talk about some of these affordability stories and also infrastructure programs. And, you know, we've got a very, very strong growing population around the country. There's going to be pressures on that. That's obviously great for long-term property investors in terms of supply of property and dwellings. So all of that is an exciting part of our program for 2018 on the couch.
Oh, mate, we have got a big year ahead of us. So, it's always a pleasure to have Jeremy on. And I reckon there's some really good data there, Ben. I'm interested to see what that looks like next month.
Yeah, because it's only 1 month. Yeah. And that's why we talked about this before, but in Feb we just didn't. You know, we weren't going to talk about the data because there wasn't enough to talk about that. But it's definitely clear if I was to make an assumption of last year versus this year, and Jeremy, I want you to throw in there, jump in.
Well, I was going to add that out of the last 4 months, Perth's location score has had 3 positive increases, which is still too early to tell. I mean,
but
next month could be interesting.
Yeah, that's a good one. So you've heard it first here on the couch. So, you know, what we can take away from that is there's definitely a difference between February 2017, so how the market started 12 months ago. There was a lot more heat. There was a lot more activity compared to what we're seeing in 2018. And there is a sentiment, we've talked about this before, the sentiment is going to shift. But I tell you what, for the keen punter, the guy who knows what they're doing, 2018 could see some really great buying opportunities for those people who have got really sensible strategy around buying when they've got the appropriate amount of income to execute on some good buying in 2018.
Yeah, we've been waiting for this opportunity. But we laugh about it. But the point is that we like, because we're buying this for a long-term play.
Correct. Right?
So we're going to be having this conversation with our clients in 10 years, in 15 years, in 20 years.
Correct.
And so it's important that, you know, our fundamentals never change.
Yeah.
It's buying the right assets, structuring it correctly, holding it for the long term. So if you can be still buying the right assets where there's even just a small drop-off in competition, because as I said before, the areas that we're buying in have still got really strong clearance rates. But just to have, if you can remove FOMO out of people's decisions, and it gets closer back to equilibrium. I mean, there's some evidence that the banks are sort of, you know, not so tight on their policy. I think I'm with you. I think it'll be a great year ahead to be buying some really good assets for people who know their cash flows well.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about how we research property or how you do it better, we've got a webinar. So we'll make sure in the show notes that we do a link to the webinar in talking about how we go through that, and then obviously how location score helps with that process as well. So if you haven't checked out locationscore.com.au, you can. But if you want to be a DIY investor, which we, you know, each to their own, then ultimately you can watch this webinar. It will give you what you need to look at, how you need to do it. And if you want to fast track, that's where location score
can
help.
Can we use the U word? Are we allowed to use the U word?
Or do tell.
Unpack.
Unpack.
Because we unpack what we Jeremy
we
just went
use that
through.
For that I know. Runway seems to be my word of the last couple of months.
We haven't used the U word or the G word in a while either. So this gold in what was just delivered there. So
beautiful.
Very, very good. Hey, my life, you know, because you'll see from our listener questions today, Ben.
Yes.
We, you know, it's the People's Podcast.
It is.
We had the Listener Mindset Minute. We had the listener questions, Jeremy, so we've got a listener life hack. And this is a beauty. It's from Belinda on Facebook, Ivis. And I should read what she says, okay? Because there's an apology for you, Rob. In an emergency call or in an emergency, just press your side lock button on the iPhone, Ben, this one.
Yep.
Jeremy. The light bulb 5 times and the emergency number and power off mode will come up. And I've tested this, and I'm on an iPhone 7 Plus.
Yeah, okay.
So when she wrote in, she said press 4 times. Didn't work on mine, you had to press 5 times. But the point is, if I go, watch this, ready?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can call emergency. So let's assume I'm in a scenario where I'm injured or whatever. I can just hit that 5 times, do that, and it'll automatically call the emergency person.
Oh, that is a cracker.
Hey, is that a good one or what?
That's a good one. Thank you, Belinda.
However, this is what Belinda also said, if I can...
Come back to your phone.
My phone. she said, not sure about Androids. Sorry, Ivis. That's
what she said. Oh, there we go. Well, it's good to see it work, Simon. It hasn't worked for the last couple of Facebooks. Well, we've moved on from phones for our Facebook Live, haven't we?
We've now gone to laptops. So, Ben.
Yes.
DYK.
Did you know?
Yeah.
Bryce, did you know that it's International Women's Day today?
I did, mate.
You did?
I did. Do you know why? What? Stiggy told me to wear a purple shirt, and this is as close as I could come.
You got no purple. Purple would work on you. I don't know why.
I like purple. I just didn't have one. And then when she said that, but a shout out to all the women. Yeah. We've got a tremendous community of women that listen to us.
So here's to you.
Yeah.
You amazing people.
Yeah, absolutely. So
did you know International Women's Day? Well, probably my best one.
Jeremy, did you know?
Yeah.
International. For the same reason. Because you got the purple chair that I was told.
We did it because it's the right thing to do, because we believe
absolutely
in the cause.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got terrific women in our life. So International Women's Day, hear, hear. So, mate, look, we've covered a lot.
We have.
Ivis is fretting.
Yeah. She's going to put all this together to get it out at 3 o'clock today. We jumped around a bit.
No, so if it gets out at 3:03 today, obviously we've just built an excuse for you. We heard from her.
Oh, there was a little laugh there. She'll try and cut that out.
She'll try and take that out. She'll try and take that out. So, mate, until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, Bryce, but only if you act on it.